Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour, stories and articles about the American West, produced at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading from True West Magazine, January-February 2024 edition. True West starts a new course. Changes in 2024 include a bi-monthly schedule, lower subscription prices, and digital expansion. True West Magazine, a publication with a rich history dating back to 1953, has navigated decades of change, continuously adapting to serve its readers through both traditional newsstands and direct mail distribution. Our dedicated team of editors, writers, and contributors has consistently brought fresh perspectives to the history of America's Old West. In the face of ongoing transformations in the magazine industry, influenced by electronic devices and the internet, external pressures have impacted our ability to maintain the distribution consistency our readers have come to expect. The national newsstand, once a stronghold, has diminished in functionality and demand, evident in the reduction of prominent positions at airports and supermarkets across America. These industry shifts have not left True West untouched. Compounded by the relentless rise in printing, manufacturing, distribution, and postage costs, our commitment to delivering a robust schedule has faced challenges. Nevertheless, we have persevered through the need to adapt, a testament to the resilience of our publication. Looking ahead to 2024, True West's business team has proactively modified the production and frequency schedule to 6 times per year. This adjustment is driven by the need to balance production and distribution costs, ensuring the sustained health of True West amidst changing economic landscapes. To reduce the impact on our valued readers, we have implemented a reduction in subscription prices and established a bi-monthly distribution schedule covering the January-February, March-April, May-June, July-August, September-October, and November-December issues. Despite these changes, our commitment to delivering fresh, well-researched editorial content remains unwavering. True West Magazine, January-February 2024 edition. The Real McCoy by John Langelier. Wyoming cowboy and Army cavalry and horse artillery veteran Tim McCoy brought realism to the silver screen. For a lad of Irish-born parents, his Michigan hometown, a lumber community, was too tame. Young Timothy John Fitzgerald McCoy longed for excitement. His father was a Civil War veteran. Smart uniforms with brass buttons and gold braid stirred his imagination. So, too, did the national hero of his day, the cowboy. During late spring 1909, the 18-year-old left family and friends in quest of the West. After arriving in Wyoming, he learned to ride, rope, brand, and became an able hand. He even acquired a small spread of his own, as well as learned sign language from the local Arapaho people whom he admired. In turn, they respected him. The Arapahos gave him the name High Eagle. With the outbreak of the First World War, McCoy's life took another turn. Filled with ideas of adventure and stirred with patriotism, McCoy, through a little Irish luck and blarney, plus a pinch of persistence, secured a commission in the United States Cavalry. When the machine gun, barbed wire, and other modern material technology spelled the beginning of the end for that branch of service, McCoy transferred to the horse artillery. After that, he spent his days as an officer at Fort Sill, Oklahoma. By the time of the 1918 armistice, McCoy impressively had risen to lieutenant colonel. No mean accomplishment for someone still in their 20s. Besides securing rapid promotion, the youthful colonel also met General Hugh Lennox Scott, who long before earned his spurs in the Indian Wars. McCoy and Scott developed a professional and personal friendship that lasted until Scott's death in 1934. In the process, McCoy learned much about the old army on the frontier. McCoy's reservoir of experience made him an ideal advisor on one of the first major budget blockbusters of the silent era, The Covered Wagon, 1923. The following year, he served in the same capacity for The Thundering Herd, which was filmed near Bishop, California, and in which McCoy had a small on-screen part as Burn Hudnall. By 1926, MGM offered McCoy a 3-year contract that launched his career as a star. His first featured role, War Paint, became a template for most of his movies with Metro. In the process, he blazed the trail for later make-believe U.S. cavalrymen, including John Wayne, Randolph Scott, Richard Widmark, and Matt Damon. In fact, more than half of McCoy's 16 starring roles between 1926 and 1929 cast him as a military officer. McCoy's 1926-29 non-military films were The Adventurer, Beyond the Sierras, The Bushranger, The Law of the Range, The Desert Rider, and Sioux Blood. War Paint also teamed McCoy with veteran director W.S. Woody Van Dyke, who the new contract player recalled as being annoyingly arrogant, maddeningly self-opinionated, damned sure of himself, and utterly ruthless. Nevertheless, McCoy conceded, Van was a great director. While Van Dyke was a demanding taskmaster, he and McCoy shared one thing in common. They wanted a high degree of realism in their productions. Although William S. Hart was touted as being the genuine article, High Eagle actually could claim he was the master of veracity. For instance, he collaborated with Van Dyke on War Paint's script because the director contended the staff writers knew nothing about the subject. He rightly concluded that McCoy did. Indeed, McCoy's movies rang with more authenticity than most other silent films. Unfortunately, even McCoy eventually succumbed to the B-Western formula. After Metro failed to renew his contract, mainly because they refused to increase his pay from the $4,000 per film he was paid, he moved on to other studios. There, he joined a litany of white Stetson-wearing matinee heroes. Later, he switched to his signature black hat to distinguish himself from the other good guys. Regrettably, as with many other nitrate pre-sound era motion pictures, most of his early films no longer exist. The extraordinary samples of images in True West demonstrate his devotion to accuracy, which in the process paved the way for hundreds of Hollywood horse soldiers who followed. He was the real McCoy. True West Magazine, January-February 2024 edition. Best of the West, Western Books by Stuart Rosebrook. The Wild Wild West. Western writers and True West editors are fighting hard to keep the genre alive. If you love to read about the Old West, True West's era of publishing since 1953 has been a glorious time for writers, researchers, scholars, and readers. The genre and the scholarship have each grown exponentially and inclusively. Under the tutelage of academics and grassroots historians and authors in such organizations as Westerners, Western Writers of America, Western History Association, Wild West History Association, formerly the National Association for Outlaw and Lawman History, and the Western Outlaw Lawman History Association, Women Writing the West, and local and state historical associations throughout the country, we've all benefited from their passion for teaching, researching, writing, publishing, and presenting on their topics. Is every aspect within the broad Western history canopy your favorite or mine? No, but that's okay. Does every writer, every researcher, every editor, every publisher, every documentarian or filmmaker get it right every single time? No, they don't, and they never will. But that does not diminish their earnestness or desire to get it right and tell a story that illuminates, provokes, or inspires ethos, pathos, or logos. I believe Western fiction and nonfiction have a long and bright future. The future may look a lot different than the analog world of hard copy magazines and books we have grown up with. The future may be all digital, streaming, and blogs. But the conversation of our Western writing community will remain relevant and purposeful if we are supportive of and energized to adapt to the new paradigms of publishing. I believe it has been a great ride so far, and there are many more great trails of writing and publishing about the West we love so dearly, ahead of us for many years to come. Western History, Best Author and Historical Nonfiction Book of the Year. Thomas E. Minkler and Montana, A Paper Trail, Montana Historical Society Press. Every year I receive a handful of books that should be considered objects of art as much as they are books. Thomas E. Minkler's Montana, A Paper Trail is one of those tomes. From the end papers to the final page, Minkler's masterpiece is as entertaining and visual travelogue of Montana history. As Dr. Brian W. Dippy notes in his foreword, in this sumptuous book, Tom lays his treasures out before our eyes and provides the context necessary to understand the claim each holds on his attention. When I look at what it is he has packed in his treasure chest, I find my vision tinged with green. While Minkler's tome is hefty, and readers will need a good-sized table to enjoy reading it, the coffee table book is also a great resource for researchers. Minkler's end notes are especially useful, as are the hundreds of pieces of artwork, material ephemera, and photographs from his personal collection. As the author says in his introduction, the pieces within the collection embedded here into a historical narrative guide the reader on a journey through the 19th century of the Northern Plains, the Rocky Mountains, and early Montana. It is a trail made of paper. Online, mhs.mt.gov. Reader's Choice, John Bessenecker's Gentleman Bandit, The True Story of Black Bart, the Old West's Most Infamous Stagecoach Rider, Hanover Square Press. Special recognition in Western History Publishing. In 2024, we'd like to recognize two Western authors for their contributions to Western history. First, John P. Langerlier, who has just published his latest book, More Work Than Glory, Buffalo Soldiers in the United States Army, 1866 to 1916, Helen and Company Publisher. Number 37 in the From Musket to Maxim, 1815 to 1914 series. Few authors in the past 45 years have published as much on the Buffalo Soldier and the Frontier Army of the West. His titles include Fighting for Uncle Sam, Buffalo Soldiers in the Frontier Army, Blue Coats, the U.S. Army in the West, 1848 to 1897, and Custer, The Man, the Myth, the Movies. His series on American Army uniforms is unmatched, and very few in the field can equal his knowledge on the subject matter. Second, and equally, we'd like to recognize Roy B. Young for his 12 years of service to the Wild West History Association as editor of the WWHA Journal. Young's leadership and fine editing have helped many youthful researchers and veteran historians achieve their goals of publishing their hard-earned research in the field of Western history. In addition, Young, with Gary L. Roberts and Casey Tieferteller, edited a Wyatt Earp anthology, Long May His Story Be Told, which received the 2019 WWHA Six Shooter Award for Best Book on Wild West History. Thank you, John P. Langelier and Roy B. Young. Your dedication to your craft, your characters and skills have been a great service to the community of Western research, editing, and publishing. Western History Publishing. Where is Western History Publishing going this year? My hopes are that publishers stay the course and Western publishing continues to flourish in 2024, even if it means fewer imprints are publishing just on the 19th century West. But we have a lot of hard work ahead of us to save the genre. As I wrote in the November 2023 issue, we must be consumers of Western culture and share that passion for the West with the next generation. Whatever platform your family and friends enjoy the most, share it, trumpet it, praise it, and give it as a gift. A broad, popular consumer interest in the West will not survive unless it is shared and celebrated with our younger friends and family members. Best Western History Book Publisher. 2 Dot, Lanham, Maryland. An imprint of Globe, quote, the trade division of Roman and Littlefield, 2 Dot must be credited for its determination to keep the Western history genre in print and affordable for popular audiences. We look forward to a strong catalog of Western history from 2 Dot in 2024. Online, 2two.books.com. Reader's Choice, Tie, Montana History Society Press and St. Martin's Press. Best University Press, University of Nebraska Press, Lincoln, Nebraska. Since 1961, Bison Books at the University of Nebraska Press has been a leader in publishing Western history. Bison has continued to do so, and in 2023, the imprint has taken a leadership position in the genre. We hope they continue to do so for many years. Online, nebraskapress.unl.edu. Reader's Choice, Tie, the University of Oklahoma Press and the University of New Mexico Press. Western Fiction. In 2023, Western Fiction Publishing was hit hard with Five Star's decision to cease publishing Old West novels. It has maintained a shorter list with its Thorndike oversized print division, but it's left a lot of authors scrambling. Pinnacle Books in New York and Wolfpack Publishing in Las Vegas, Nevada, have maintained their lists and are really the last two imprints publishing traditional Western fiction in any volume. A small emerging imprint is Silverado Press, which publishes Jeff Marriott's Birds, Luck, and Other Western Stories, Traditional Western Fiction and Western Horror Fiction, and Howard Weinstein's Galloway's Gamble 2, Lucifer and the Great Baltimore Brawl. Western fiction is being published by small houses, authors publishing independently, and a few university publishers. And an occasional novel set in the West makes it to the editor-agent steeplechase in New York. But on the horizon, there are no Larry McMurtrys emerging in today's publishing atmosphere in the Big Apple. Best Historical Western Novelist and Novel. Paulette Giles and Channonville, A Novel of Murder, Loss, and Vengeance. William Morrow Press. New York Times best-selling author of News of the World, Paulette Giles' latest, Channonville, is a well-researched, sharply written novel that takes the reader on a journey from the post-Civil War Midwest to the Texas frontier. Giles, who writes from her home in San Antonio, Texas, was a nominee for the 2016 National Book Award for News. Channonville is her sixth Western novel, and readers should take another look at her body of work that is set during and after the Civil War in Missouri, Texas, and the Southern Plains. I am eager to read the next volume by the Missouri native, who is also an accomplished poet, essayist, and memoirist. Online, harpercollins.com. Reader's Choice, Johnny D. Boggs and Longhorns East, Pinnacle, Kensington Press. Best First-Time Author, Ride a Fast Horse, a Captain Tom Skinner book, Book 1, by Kevin Warren, Pinnacle Books. Congratulations to Wyoming author Kevin Warren on his first Western novel. A lifelong cowboy who grew up in Arizona's Verde Valley, Warren spent 20-plus years on the back of a horse guiding hunters into the Wyoming backcountry before writing his first book of Western fiction. Warren's novel is inspired and informed by his many years on Wyoming's rough and rugged trails and the characters he has met along the way. In addition to guiding and outfitting, Warren has worn many hats in the horse business, including working as a farrier, rancher, and riding instructor. His follow-up, The Night Holds Terror, will be released in 2024. Online, kensingtonbooks.com. Best Western Fiction Press, Pinnacle Books, New York. In the annals of Western fiction publishing, Gary Goldstein is one man who has not received enough recognition for keeping the genre alive and viable for booksellers. For over 20 years, he has had the reins of mass market Westerns at Pinnacle, and I credit Goldstein for the imprint's success. He is a master at maintaining strong author brands, including William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone, while cultivating two generations of Western authors, many of whom are now household names: Johnny D. Boggs, Max McCoy, Charles G. West, Dusty Richards, Brett Cogburn, and Terrence McCauley. Online, KensingtonBooks.com. Reader's Choice, Wolf Pack Publishing, Las Vegas, Nevada. Bookselling. One of the joys of travel is visiting bookstores, and travelers will discover all across the West that the pulse of the local community can be discovered in the neighborhood bookstore. True West's authors applaud the independent bookstore owners who keep their stores open in their towns across the West. If you have a favorite Western bookshop, let us know. We'd love to share it in an upcoming issue of the magazine. Best Western History Bookstore, Cactus Bookshop, San Angelo, Texas. After a tour of historic Fort Concho, don't miss a chance to visit the downtown San Angelo landmark, Cactus Bookshop. With shelves overflowing with Western Americana, West Texas history, and Texana, there's something for everyone who loves the Old West. And don't forget, Cactus has the largest selection of Elmer Kelton books in the country. Online, cactusbookshop.com. Reader's Choice, Collected Works, Santa Fe, New Mexico. True West Magazine, January-February 2024. Best of the West, True Westerner. The man who loves the West, Al Harper, is True West's 2024 True Westerner of the Year. I fell in love with trains when my dad gave my brothers and me a Lionel train set when I was 8, says Alan C. Harper, owner of the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad in Durango, Colorado. The American Heritage Railways operator from Southern Illinois has been in the tourism and railway business since 1992, beginning with an investment in the Florida Fun Train. Harper soon saw his financial stake in the Florida Railway was not going to succeed, so he bought the Durango and Silverton in 1998 to save his initial investment, he says. The Fun Train disappeared, and there I was, owning a historic railroad in Colorado. Now, 32 years later, Harper and his wife Carol entertain 2 million guests a year at their tourism enterprises. They currently own the DNSNGRR and the Great Smoky Mountain Railroad in Bryson City, North Carolina. In the past, he has been involved in managing and advising the Texas State Railroad, the Skunk Train in Fort Bragg, Willits, California, and the Cubras and Toltec Scenic Railroad in Chama, New Mexico, and Tonito, Colorado. Harper also has been a leader in licensing deals with his railroads, creating entertaining specialty trains in partnership with Warner Brothers, Universal Studios, Peanuts International, and the Jim Henderson Company. Harper's specialty trains are one of his hallmarks for broadening his audience across all generations. The trick to running a successful railroad is to maintain the historical importance of a line while using modern innovation, like train stories from children's books, to attract a new audience of families with young children. 2 years after the Harpers acquired the Durango and Silverton, Bob Bozbell put together an investment group to buy True West Magazine. Ever since, True West Magazine has been a great promoter of the historic railroad and its mission of sustaining the heritage of the Old West. Bell, who grew up along the Santa Fe Railroad's transcontinental line in Kingman, Arizona, is grateful to Al's dedication to the West. You won't find a bigger supporter of the history we love than Al Harper. We are looking forward to working with Al at his new venue at Old Tucson to help him create a first-class museum there, says Bell. So look for big things in the future from Al and us. So how did Harper fall in love with the West? He credits his parents' love of travel with an annual history theme and his admiration for his Western heroes of film and television. I have always loved history, says Harper. That started with my parents who themed our vacations. But running the Durango in Silverton has not been without its challenges. I adopted the philosophy that the best way to preserve history is to make its presentation so extraordinary that people will pay a fair price for a great experience. Harper's passion for his railroads is infectious, and anyone who has had the pleasure of riding on the DNSNGRR is immediately planning to go back on the line when the Colorado businessman describes his favorite section of the railway. You haven't lived until you've ridden on the High Line aboard the Durango and Silverton Narrow Gauge Railroad, he says. Not only does it show you what man's ingenuity can produce, but also lets you witness firsthand the glory of all that God has made. When Harper is asked what the future foretells for the railway business, his answer is straight out of Walt Disney's playbook. To appeal to the masses of all ages, I have to become an entertainer, says Harper. Our company preserves history, educates, and entertains to draw the crowds. We need no tax dollars and no charity. And what keeps the tireless Western promoter inspired to take on a new venture like Old Tucson? I have a very supportive wife who let me gamble everything to buy the first railroads. It was my parents who taught me to love history. It was my first train ride on the DNSNGRR through the Rocky Mountains, pulled by a 100-year-old steam engine that made me decide, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. At True West Magazine, we're honored to name Al Harper the 2024 True Westerner of the Year for his 3 decades of dedication to the promotion and preservation of the West, his service to educating generations of guests at his historic railroads, and his determination to keep the Old West alive and entertaining for all ages, now and for years to come. True West Magazine, January-February 2024. Top 10 True Western Towns of the Year. Time to motor west. Enjoy welcoming Western hospitality when you stay and explore the region's best towns. Whether you grew up in a small town or a big city, in the American West or overseas, there is no better way to discover the true meaning of hospitality than a week-long stay in one of America's best Western towns. True West's 2024 Top 10 Towns celebrates the best communities of the West and the men and women who work year-round to preserve, promote, and celebrate their Western history and heritage. Our favorite Western communities offer historic sites and museums and fully restored century-old or more hotels, restaurants, and saloons. Perfect places to make your headquarters during an extended holiday exploring the town and the surrounding region. The editors of True West invite you to pack your bags and motor west to stay and immerse yourself in the unique heritage and history of the best Western towns. But watch out, you might just discover yourself planning to come back next year, or even buying a second home and making it more permanent than just a one-time adventure out west. Number 1. Cody, Wyoming. From near and far, across the United States and around the world, Cody, Wyoming is synonymous with the West. William F. Buffalo Bill Cody lent his name to the town, which was founded as a land venture to attract the railroad near the east entrance of Yellowstone. As a prominent Western destination and Eastern gateway to Yellowstone, Cody is a city that can be returned to year after year in all seasons to explore the magnificent natural wonders, historic sites, and world-class museums. From the historic Irma Hotel, founded by Buffalo Bill Cody in downtown Cody, to nearby guest ranches and lodges with trail riding and fly fishing, the Wyoming city of 10,000 is the perfect place to immerse yourself in the West. Enjoy the Western atmosphere while walking the historic downtown district, which is filled with fun boutiques, coffee shops, restaurants, and saloons, including the famous Victorian bar at the Irma Hotel. The Buffalo Bill Center of the West is the most significant museum complex in the United States outside of the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Admission includes entrance to the center's 5 museums, Buffalo Bill, Plains Indian, Cody Firearms, Draper Natural History, and Whitney Western Art. The McCracken Research Library is also open to visitors, but an appointment must be made to view archival materials. If you are a summer visitor, the 1890s Old Trail Town is open from May 15th to September 30th in 2024. The outdoor park has the largest collection of frontier structures in one place in Wyoming and includes a mountain man memorial and the gravesite of John Liver Eaton Johnson. Western art lovers flock to Cody year-round, but especially in September for the Rendezvous Royale and prestigious Buffalo Bill Art Show and Sale, which in 2024 will be held September 21st through the 24th. If you think Cody is all about museums and natural wonders, think again. The Cody Stampede Rodeo and Cody Night Rodeo make the northwestern Wyoming town one of the rodeo capitals of America. In 2024, the annual Stampede will celebrate its 105th anniversary, June 30th through July 4th. And the 86th anniversary of the Night Rodeo is held every remaining summer night, June through August. All these reasons and more are why Cody is our number one true Western town for 2024. Online, CodyYellowstone.org. Number 2, Prescott, Arizona. The original territorial capital of Arizona is well known as everyone's hometown and has rightfully earned that nickname. The historic and picturesque Mile High Town in Yavapai County is the perfect place to take a walk through the state's history. Start at the Charlotte Hall Museum, a living history center that has one of the finest collections of territorial buildings in the state, including the territorial governor's home, the Charlotte Hall Building, and Fort Misery. The Lawler Exhibit Center's Prehistory of the Central Highlands provides visitors with an insightful understanding of the natural and cultural history of the area before the arrival of Europeans. From Charlotte Hall, walk east on Gurley Street to the historic Yavapai County Courthouse Plaza and Prescott's historic downtown district. Solon Borglum's Rough Rider Bronze, also known as the Bucky O'Neill Monument, was dedicated in 1907 and is one of the most recognized landmarks in the city and the state. The historic district around the plaza is a mecca of antique shops, boutiques, restaurants, historic hotels, and classic historic bars, including the Birdcage, Matt's Saloon, and the Palace Restaurant and Saloon. The Palace is the oldest operating bar in the state and offers up great food and entertainment in a historic Old West Museum atmosphere. While in Prescott, schedule time to visit Prescott's Western Heritage Center, just down the street from the palace, the Indigenous Peoples Museum, and the Phippen Museum, which houses one of the finest Western art collections in the state. Prescott holds public festivals and parades on the plaza year-round, including the popular and annual courthouse lighting held the first Saturday of every December. Since 1888, the city's biggest annual event, the world's oldest rodeo, has been held every 4th of July. In 2024, Prescott Frontier Days will celebrate its 136th anniversary with 8 shows July 1st through the 7th. The annual Prescott Frontier Days parade will be held on Saturday morning, July 6th. Online, prescott.org. Number 3. Fort Smith, Arkansas. In 1817, Fort Smith was founded as an outpost of a youthful nation growing westward. Over 2 centuries later, Fort Smith is still a crossroads of history. But today, the history can be discovered in its local and national museums. Fort Smith was built on the bluffs of the Arkansas River and has maintained an important and vital economic center for the tri-state region of Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. While Missouri's St. Louis Independence and St. Joseph receive more attention in the history books, Fort Smith's role in the development and settlement of the Western Territories must be considered. The National Park Service's Fort Smith National Historic Site is one of the largest, best-preserved interpretive centers of a historic 19th-century federal post west of the Mississippi. Tours should begin at the visitor center in the fort's former barracks courthouse prison. Fort Smith may have been best known as the court of Judge Isaac Parker, the hanging judge, but it is also becoming famous for the service of hundreds of deputy U.S. marshals, including Bass Reeves. Visitors can see the 37-acre grounds of Fort Smith on a 1.5-mile self-guided tour of all the key historic structures and sites, including the Trail of Tears National Historic Trail Overlook. In the city, visitors should enjoy walking the Fort Smith Bell Grove Historic District, a 22-block area of homes dating back 130 years. Four of the homes are open to the public. The newest museum to open in Fort Smith is the United States Marshals Museum. The state-of-the-art facility opened its doors in July 2023 and is one of the most significant historical centers to open in the country in the past 5 years. Online, fortsmith.org. Number 4, Tombstone, Arizona. In the annals of Old West history in the United States, few towns are as iconic and internationally famous as Tombstone. The town, too tough to die, is the Grand Canyon State's most infamous mining camp and is known worldwide as a destination for those who want to walk the streets of the Earps and Clantons with hopes of discovering the truth about the notorious gunfight behind the OK Corral. Visitors have many choices for lodging when planning a visit to the historic mining camp. Tombstone Monument Ranch is a historic working cattle ranch where guests can stay in rooms and buildings rebuilt to look like old Tombstone in the 1880s. They can even work cattle and learn the basics of cowboying. Also popular are local motels and bed and breakfasts, including the Larian Motel, the Tombstone Grand Hotel, Trail Riders Inn, and Virgil's Corners Bed and Breakfast. When booking a vacation to Tombstone, consider staying at least a long weekend to visit all the local attractions. Plan a longer stay if you're attending one of the popular annual festivals, which kick off every March with the annual Tombstone Wild West Days, followed by Wyatt Earp Days in May and Doc Holliday Days in August. The annual Old West festivals culminate with the oldest and most prestigious El Dorado Days, which is held the third weekend of every October. A trip to Tombstone would not be complete without touring Big Nose Kate's Saloon, the Crystal Palace, C.S. Flies, O.K. Corral, the Birdcage Saloon, Rose Tree Museum, Good Enough Underground Mine Tour, Gunfighter Hall of Fame, and the Tombstone Epitaph Museum. Online, tombstonechamber.com. Number 5, San Angelo, Texas. For many who travel the West, the first place they stop when they enter a new town is the local bookstore. For those who love a good bookshop and the West, the Cactus Bookshop in San Angelo is the place to start your visit to this wonderful West Texas town, which the great Western writer Elmer Kelton called home. The Cactus was Kelton's favorite bookseller in the area, and if you love his books and Western reads of all kinds, then this is the place for you. Once inside its lovely confines, you are sure to discover a handful of good books on local history and maybe a couple of Kelton's novels to enjoy during your road trip. San Angelo was founded in 1867, adjacent to the newly constructed Fort Concho near the Concho River. The post-Civil War era was a time of expansion in West Texas, and the fort and town were strategically placed at a key frontier crossroads. Fort Concho served its purpose effectively until it was closed in 1889. Today, San Angelo is still a vital economic center for the region's agriculture and oil industries, with nearly 120,000 residents living in the metro area. The city is home to Angelo State University, the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts, San Angelo State Park, and San Angelo Nature Center. The city owns and operates historic Fort Concho, an active living history center with a museum. 23 buildings at the landmark have been preserved and are great examples of Frontier Army architecture. Two big events are held every year: Buffalo Soldier Heritage Day in February and Fort Concho Frontier Day in April. If you didn't know already, nothing small happens in West Texas, and the San Angelo Rodeo and Stock Show is no exception. Founded in 1932, the Stock Show in 2024 is officially February 1st through the 18th, but livestock events start on January 24th and culminate during the rodeo with the final premium sale on April 20th. The San Angelo Rodeo at the Foster Communications Coliseum is April 5th through the 21st, with the rodeo parade on April 6th. And if that's not enough rodeo for you, in October, the Cinch Roping Fiesta is a popular three-day event. Online, discoversanangelo.com. Number 6, Deadwood, South Dakota. Walking down Deadwood's Main Street is like walking back in time. On the National Register of Historic Places, the city is one of the most significant Western boom towns in Old West history. Deadwood earned its reputation as a Wild West town, honestly. Founded in 1876 after gold was illegally discovered on the Sioux Nation, Deadwood quickly gained notoriety as a 24-hour den of inequity, with dozens of saloons, gambling halls, and houses of prostitution. Visitors to the Black Hills of South Dakota will discover quickly that a week is not enough time to enjoy all the historic sites and natural wonders of the region. Deadwood is a great place to call home while touring the hills, with easy access north and south on scenic mountain roads to Mount Rushmore, National Memorial, Crazy House Horse Memorial, Custer State Park, and Wind Caves National Park. Hiking, fishing, off-roading, and horseback riding are all fun outdoor activities available while staying in Deadwood. The city's Boosters hosts a series of popular festivals every year, including Wild Bill Days, June 13th through the 15th, and Days of 76, July 21st through the 27th. The PRCA has named the Days of 76 rodeo the best rodeo 19 times. As they say, best rodeo, no bull. Book a room in the historic Bullock Hotel, and you'll be in walking distance of all that Deadwood has to offer by day and night, including most of its museums. Stop at the visitor center at the historic train station and pick up directions to the Adams Museum, Historic Adams House, Days of 76 Museum, the Brothel, and the Homestake Adams Research and Cultural Center. And don't forget to visit the Mount Moriah Cemetery high above the town. The views are spectacular. The walks through the historic memorial grounds are peaceful and reflective. And a stop at James Butler, Wild Bill Hickok, and Martha Calamity Jane Connery's gravesites provide a gravitas to a visit to Deadwood that will not soon be forgotten. Online, deadwood.com. The Dallas, Oregon. Originally founded as the terminus of the Oregon Trail, the Dallas has played a key role in Oregon's history ever since. Long before the first European explorers traveled up the Columbia River, George, the Dallas was a tribal fishing center and crossroads of Northwestern native culture. With the advent of the Oregon Trail, the Dallas developed as a launching point for immigrant rafting parties down the river to the Willamette River Valley. While an alternate overland route was built over the Cascade Mountains and around Mount Hood to Oregon City, the Dallas remained an important economic and transportation hub. Today, the city is home to a little more than 16,000 residents and is a hub of activity for enthusiasts of the Columbia River Gorge scenic area. If you plan on exploring the history and natural wonders of the Columbia River Gorge region for a long weekend or more, the Dallas is a wonderful city to make your headquarters. The Dallas Main Street District downtown is home to over 100 businesses, including bakeries and coffee bistros, brew pubs and wineries, eclectic and unique shops such as Clint's Booksellers and National Neon Sign Museum, and convenient places to stay like the Celio Inn and the Dallas Inn. The Columbia Gorge Discovery Center and Museum is one of the state's most significant museums and a perfect destination where all ages can learn about Oregon and the Northwest history and culture. The museum's exhibits detail the history of the local American Indian tribes, early European and American exploration, and the Oregon Trail. Territorial and pioneer history is also on display at one of Oregon's oldest museums, the historic Fort Dallas Museum and Anderson Homestead. While Lewis and Clark encamped at the location in 1805, the first permanent building in Fort Dallas was constructed in 1838. Today's museum exhibits are housed in the Surgeon's Home, which was built in 1856. The Anderson Homestead is a grand collection of Swedish pioneer farm buildings, relocated and restored on the campus. A tour illuminates day-to-day family life on an Oregon homestead. Online, explore the Dallas, DALLES.com. Number 8, Abilene, Kansas. Illinois cattle driver Joe McCoy did not know what he was starting when in 1867 he advertised his new Abilene Stockyards and Drover's Cottage in Texas newspapers. But he might as well have been launching a mini revolution with his entrepreneurial investment in the Kansas Pacific Railroad town. Today, Abilene is a modern eastern Kansas city of about 6,500 residents. The Dickinson County seat is nestled in the state's Smoky Hills region and has been an important economic center for the region since the first cattle arrived in town via the trails from Texas over 150 years ago. The city was important enough that a future president's parents settled there in 1898. Future West Point graduate and World War II Army leader Dwight D. Eisenhower spent his most formative years in Abilene, and today it is home to the Dwight D. Eisenhower Presidential Library, Museum, and Boyhood Home. Two other Old West attractions should not be missed: the Abilene and Smoky Valley Railroad and Old Abilene Town are fun for all ages and offer many enjoyable activities throughout the summer season, including Chisholm Trail Days, held every Labor Day weekend. The local Heritage Center of Dickinson County should also be toured to learn about the local history and heritage. Downtown Abilene is great for walking and has plenty of entertainment and eating establishments for all ages and interests, including antiques and specialty store shopping. Looking for some great photo ops? Don't miss a photo in front of the world's largest belt buckle and the Big Spur before a ride on the C.W. Parker Carousel, the oldest of its kind, still in operation. Online, AbileneKansas.org. Number 9, Lubbock, Texas. Famously known as Hub City, because all roads in West Texas lead to Lubbock, the Southern Plains city is definitely the economic center for the vast region of the Lone Star State. With Texas Tech University and a vibrant downtown working in tandem to elevate the quality of life in the bustling city, visitors will quickly discover they will need 3 to 5 days to enjoy everything Lubbock has to offer. The recently opened Cotton Court Hotel near downtown is a perfect place to stay while relaxing in Lubbock. Museums are a staple in Lubbock. If you love Western ranch and agricultural history, start at the National Ranching Heritage Center and then schedule time at the American Windmill Museum and Fiber Max Center for Discovery. Local art and music history fans should not miss tours of the Buddy Holly Center, Museum of Texas Tech University, and the Caviel Museum of African American History. And if you are a researcher of Western history, book some extra time in the university's libraries and archives. Every September, Lubbock hosts its second largest event after Texas Tech football. The National Cowboy Symposium and Celebration is held at the Lubbock Memorial Civic Center and includes chuck wagon cook-offs, American Indian dance demonstrations, and the always popular Saturday morning annual parade of horses. If you love regional wine, you'll want to book a ticket on the Lubbock Shuttle for a Sunday brunch wine tour, or go on a walking wine tour in downtown where you can sample vintages at McPherson Cellars and Berkeley Hill Vineyards. And what about Red Raiders athletics? Well, if you love college football, I'd put a game in Jones AT&T Stadium on your bucket list. You just might find yourself coming back every fall to the Hub City for some great entertainment, gourmet food, local wine, and a Texas Tech tailgate. Guns up! Online, LubbockChamber.com. Number 10, Miles City, Montana. Located at the confluence of the Yellowstone and Tongue Rivers, Miles City was founded in 1877 and named after Colonel Nelson Miles, the commander of nearby Fort Keogh. Today, nearly 150 years later, Miles City is one of the Big Sky State's most important economic hubs for ranching and farming in the plains region of southeastern Montana. The Custer County seat is home to nearly 8,500 residents and is conveniently located off Interstate 94 and Montana Highway 59. Outdoor recreation is also popular at Woodruff Park, Spotted Eagle Recreation Area, Strawberry Hills, Signal Butte, Mile Dam, the Tongue River, and the Pirogue Island State Park. Don't miss a tour of the city's historic downtown district. Ranching and local cowboy history can be experienced firsthand at the Miles City Saddlery, which has been in business at 808 Main Street in Miles City since 1910. Walking downtown is sure to make you thirsty and hungry, so schedule time to visit the historic Montana Bar. If you love museums, Miles City has two not to miss, the Range Rider Museum and Waterworks Art Museum. If you love the Old West, schedule a few hours to tour the Range Rider, which has become the primary museum for exhibiting the history of southeastern Montana. Every May, rodeo fans and promoters from around the world attend the world-famous Miles City Bucking Horse Sale to compete and to see the next great generation of bucking horses. The annual Miles City Ranch Rodeo Parade is one of the most popular events in the southeastern Montana community. If you love county fairs, the Eastern Montana Fair is held every August. Events include 4-H and animal exhibits, demolition derby, carnival, concerts, and a PRCA rodeo. So what are you waiting for? Time to cowboy up and head to Miles City. Online, MilesCityChamber.com. True West, January-February 2024. Ask the Marshal. Brothers in Arms, Henry Rifles, and Teepees by Marshal Trimble. Question. When did the Army invert its chevrons, and why was that done? Bob Brooks, Fort Worth, Texas. Chevrons are the stripes on a uniform arm that denote rank or experience. From 1820 to 1903, the insignia was worn with the point down. From 1903 to 1905, there was some confusion, and rank could be worn with the point either up or down. On November 30th, 1905, the War Department determined that the points of the chevrons would be worn points upward. The reason given was that the stripes pointing up denoted success in war, a sign of strength, and winning. By that reasoning, points facing downward was a sign of having lost or of weakness. Some of America's toughest allies, the Canadians, British, and Australians, wear their chevrons pointing down. They can provide some heated debate on that one. Question. Many Southern Plains tribes, Comanche, Kiowa, Southern Cheyenne, lived in areas with few trees. How did they get poles for their teepees? Kevin Henderson, Round Rock, Texas. All these tribes ranged hundreds, if not thousands, of miles from their usual stomping grounds, the Llano Estacado. The large pole pines are native to the Rocky Mountains, growing in middle to high elevations and dry, cold forests. They're conveniently close to where those tribes spent part of the year. Spruce trees also made good lodge poles. Question. Were Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid friends? Charlie Fowler, Dallas, Texas. It's likely they knew each other, but they weren't close friends. Question. When was the last Indian War attack in the U.S.? Harry Delger, Charleston, South Carolina. During the late 1800s and early 1900s, the Yaqui people were fighting the government of Mexico, hoping to establish an independent homeland in Sonora. Yaqui warriors joined in the rebellion when the Mexican Revolution broke out in 1910. But by 1916, Mexican generals were claiming Yaqui land as their own, which led to renewed conflict between Yaqui and Mexican military forces. On January 8, 1918, at Bear Valley in southern Arizona, the Battle of Bear Valley was fought between the Yaqui Indians and the U.S. 10th Cavalry troops. The Yaqui had been illegally purchasing weapons in the U.S. Believing the Buffalo soldiers were Mexican troops, they opened fire on them. After a firefight, the troopers overtook a group of 10 Indians who were covering for the escape of the rest of the band into Mexico and took them captive. One officer later wrote of the engagement that it was a courageous stand by a brave group of Indians, and the cavalrymen treated them with the respect due to fighting men. All 10 Yaqui were captured, including the chief, who had been badly wounded and died the next day. The surviving prisoners were held at Aravaca while the army awaited orders from Washington. Eventually, they were sent in chains to Tucson for trial in federal court, where they were charged with illegal exporting of arms without a license. The adults were sentenced to 30 days, a much preferable outcome than deportation to Mexico, where they would have been executed. Question: was the Henry repeating rifle ever used as a buffalo gun? Joe Marquez, Whittier, California. The Henry was seldom used as a buffalo gun. It was designed for human targets. According to Andrew Bresnan of the National Henry Rifle Company, the Henry was not a powerful round, but it held 16 quick shots with which to repel a sudden Indian attack. The cartridge, with its 200-grain bullet and 26 grains of black powder, is a marginal hunting round. The New Haven Arms Company, however, made claims to the contrary, saying it was lethal on buffalo and bear. Despite its popularity, only some 14,000 were ever produced.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.